people saying, oh, it's not anime because it wasn't done in Japan. Okay, fine. Yes, it was. If you want to be like that specific, then yes, maybe it's not. But it's like saying, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it's like saying sushi done in the UK is not sushi because it's not done in Japan. Okay, you might not get... this.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah, you agree. Yeah,
I
exactly.
agree. I mean,
exactly.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Bonkai. Senbon Sakura. Kageyoshi. Welcome anime fans to the Super Anime Podcast, where each week we look to entertain, inspire and inform you on all things anime. Whether you're new to anime or a seasoned veteran, we invite you to come listen, share and laugh with us. We hope every episode ignites your otaku spirit and leaves you feeling super. Thanks for listening, hope you enjoy, let's start the show. Yes, and welcome back to another episode of Super Anime Podcast. We did it again. We did it again. You know, it was so good the first time that we had to have Mr. Jones back for another episode for part two, as it were, you know, the sequel. So thank you so much. As I've mentioned, his name is Mr. Jones. If you haven't listened to part one, please go listen to part one. It was an absolute fire. We featured him on as our Black History Month guest. So welcome again, Mr. Frederick Jones, founder of Saturday AM. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. Of course, it's a real pleasure to chat with you, man. You have a voice made for radio, my man.
I try. So, you know, as we do on this show, we always try to bring you value. We always try to bring you the best topics, the best guests. And today we have both. We have the best guest and the best topic. And Mr. Jones is kindly giving us the platform, or I should say, giving us the exclusive on this platform of something that's happening at Saturday AM. So, with that said, I'm going to hand it over to Mr. Jones. And remember, this is an exclusive. You heard it here first on Super Anime Podcast. Thank you so much, Mr. Jones, for giving us the privilege to announce this exclusive.
Yeah, man. No, it's definitely my pleasure. And you guys obviously are a fantastic fit for us to talk about what we're doing. So for those of you who maybe have not heard the first episode of this podcast or the first part of it, you know, Saturday AM is the world's most diverse manga brand. We have creators from all over the world, from 6 out of 7 continents, people from all different backgrounds. And we do a digital anthology that's much like Shonen Jump. So if you follow Shueisha in Japan and you see they've got Shonen Jump, they've got V Jump, they've got Jump Square. We have Saturday AM, we have Saturday PM, we have Saturday Brunch. We just debuted something new called Saturday Afternoon, which is a webcomic version of our product. But we now are making the next step, which is to do our series that we have exclusively inside of our magazines to collect them into one volume of material as individual series, just like Japan when they take a series like Naruto and collect it into a tankobon from the pages of Shonen Jump. And we are announcing a partnership with a wonderful company called the Corto Group and their imprint called Rockport. And we're going to be doing Saturday AM branded books that will consist of all of our biggest series collected in brand new graphic novel format. These are going to be, these are going to be really nice. We're really trying to innovate this as we've tried to do with manga in general by offering just a diverse take on everything. And so from this standpoint, you know, what our hope is that that we can introduce even more audiences to the world of manga-inspired comics, because these will be series from creators who are all over the world. The first 4 books that we've announced are Apple Black by White Manga, who's a Nigerian. Saigami, Volume 1 by Sinny, who is from Hungary. Hammer, which is a new series from a young man from America named Jay Oden. And then Oblivion Rouge, which is the series we do in a magazine we have called Saturday PM. And this is from a creator who is from Senegal. And it's an all African, Afrofuturistic sort of like tuning exam featuring an all black cast. And so we're incredibly excited about this. The first year we will drop 10 graphic novels. We've not revealed all of them just yet, but there'll be 10 graphic novels that will come out in our very first year, which is next year, 2022, beginning in June. So the books are going to be really unique. They're going to have all sorts of elements to them that you would not see in traditional manga, including, of course, diverse creators and diverse characters. But two of the things that we have that we can talk about briefly is that, first and foremost, these books will have a brand new post-credit scene. So they'll actually, the series will, the volume will come to an end, and then, you know, somewhere towards the end of the book, you'll see a brand new scene, completely new. You won't have seen it if you read the magazine. It'll be completely built just for the graphic novel. Mm-hmm. And it'll be a scene that will give you some really interesting, shocking reveals and may hint, you know, point you to some things that you weren't expecting. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that we're going to be doing with these books is that, and it kind of ties into the post-credit scene, is that we are going to be tying all these series together as part of the multiverse. So Saturday M will have a multiverse. These series all impact one another somewhere down the line, and you'll see all of that in these books. So yeah, we're really excited. We're so pleased to be working with the Quarto Group, and I want to tell your listeners about this really awesome new step in manga.
I mean, that is just major, absolutely major. First of all, listeners, please get the Saturday AM app. It's amazing. I'm gonna link the actual article of the deal in our show notes, so you can have a read through the full and digest the full article there. And also, I really love the fact that you mentioned there's gonna be a multiverse. That is just it's, you know, you think of Marvel and how they build that brand as relates to, you know, linking different things. I just smiled when you said that, seen an equivalent, but more so people of color and things like that. That's just absolutely, yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait. That should be awesome.
Yeah, we're pretty excited about it. And it's, you know, it's funny, like you hear, just hearing your excitement level is really rewarding. But more importantly, like you said, I mean, like, when you made the comment about, you know, seeing these, you know, these characters of color and then seeing them get to interact, like, that really is why it was so important for us to go down this route, because, you know, we fought really hard. I mean, I've taken so many attacks on my personally from all over the place, trying to build Saturday AM. And so to build something that is inclusive, where everybody can feel at home, but that does make sure that the people who typically don't get featured, don't get seen, are really given a platform, really given a chance to express themselves. You know, that is really important. And so the idea that we would, you know, do it and then these characters would be locked off from one another just seemed like really, you know, it just seemed weird. It was like, you know, like it was like, you know, man, like we fought this hard to try to get representation in manga's content. And then to have these characters like have their own problems, and they don't even have the ability to like interact with one another and be like, oh, hey, there's another, you know, person like me, or like, hey, I'm part of a larger whole. Like, I'm not just the star of my story, but I can be, you know, a central part of a universal story. Like, I think that was really important for us, because I think, you know, identity and inclusion, you know, part of that idea is the ability that we're all part of a community. And so having that be relevant in the books is really important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one thing, actually, when reading the article, I didn't realize they were actually founded in the UK, which was quite surprising,
yeah.
Actually.
That's right. Yeah.
That was actually quite surprising. Yeah. So, yeah.
And so I was going to say, so these books will be available globally. So, I mean,
sure.
One of the reasons we did this deal was to make sure that, that, you know, we already have a global audience, but we wanted to make sure that if we did physical graphic novels, that they could be available around the world. So you will, due to this deal, not only will you see these books available around the world, but, you know, over time you will see these books available in different languages. And that's a really important move for us.
You know what I kind of liken it to, and please do stop me if this is a bad example, but you know how, you know, first something like, as an example, is in sub, and then after they branch it off into different languages, they might put it in, you know, English as, you know, the main language, that in Spanish being spoken about. So I think the books gives it another layer, as you mentioned, in terms of distribution and reaching out wider to a broader, more, I guess, newer audience regarding Saturday AM, regarding visibility of these artists. I think you mentioned that, but I think it's just great that, you know, not only there, but we can go beyond. And then, as you mentioned, someone can pick up a physical copy. So that's absolutely great. Absolutely great.
Yeah, absolutely. No, completely. And, you know, I mean, obviously our goal is to be available and to be relevant everywhere. So, mm-hmm. you know, we hope that, you know, if someone wants to buy stuff digital, like you said, we have an app. We'll have other, you know, things that can be embraced with these stories digitally. But, you know, we wanted to make sure that we had a physical opportunity for people who really wanted to feel the book in their hands, to see these characters come to life in, you know, in a way that only physical can do. We thought it was really important to have that that delivery vehicle. And so we're really excited about the books for all those reasons you just mentioned, the community, the diversity, the kind of recognition that young people will feel when they get to see people who look like them starring in these stories. And then like the excitement of seeing them all come together at various times. So.
No, and that's very true because, you know, in the BBC, not BBC, in here in the UK, we have something called BBC. You're probably familiar with it. On the BBC, there was some black artists just talking about, you know, writing books, so on and so forth. And, you know, the lack of, I guess, representation in terms of seeing themselves in these kind of books. So, again, this is just more ammo as it relates to, you know, increasing that catalogue of people of colour that have been seen in books, because it's not necessarily, you know, those graphically illustrated books, it's not always that you see people of colour. So again, this is, as I mentioned, adds another set of into the library of that. So honestly, I can't wait. I'll definitely look to purchase some copies here. In fact, you know what, this is what we're going to do. Sorry, you mentioned this already, Mr. Jones. Has it already been released in the UK?
What?
The books, yeah. When will the books be released?
No. So the books will come out June of 2022. That's when they debut. First books are Apple Black, Saigami, and Hammer. And then in July, and by the way, a Saturday Ann Presents How to Draw a Diverse Manga book. That'll come out as well in June. And then in July, Oblivion Rouge comes out. And then I believe there'll be books, and we'll announce all this at a later date, but I believe... Mm-hmm. There'll be a book coming out, a brand new book coming out every single month after that, different series and so forth.
Perfect. So what we're going to do is the first, I don't know how much they are, but let's do this. I'm going to say the first 10 books, I'm going to put my money where my, I'm going to say the first 10 books, whoever sends a voice note saying, please, can I have a Saturday AM book? I will personally make sure when it comes out, you get a book. And you can make sure you look at the catalog, whether it be Apple Black series, whatever you want to get, let me know and I'll purchase it and send it to you wherever you are in the world. You said you heard it here first. So we thank you that's for the exclusive. Awesome. And yeah, we'll do that. We will absolutely do that.
Wow.
So,
now that's a tagline for a super podcast. That's awesome, man. Super anime podcast, ladies and gentlemen. They give you free books. That's awesome.
Well, hey, you know, we got to support each other, man, in the community. So
I totally agree.
Yeah,
you know, and I'll just say real quickly, I mean, you know, I've been talking about this earlier today. I mean, you know, again, like, you know, we consider diversity everything. So, you know, like, I mean, you know, yes, I mean, ethnic diversity is very important to us. I'm an African-American myself, if folks didn't hear the first episode. But, you know, beyond that, though, you know, we have characters in this first year. You'll see characters who are Indian, characters who are Latino, characters who are LGBTQ. So we, you know, we truly believe in diversity across the board. So.
Oh, perfect.
So you got to find yourself in the books. Definitely.
Yeah. There's a lot of... Okay. So as I mentioned, listeners, send a voice note. Go to Super Anime Podcast. You already know the deal right now. Go to the orange mic. Send a note saying, hey, love the episode you did with Mr. Jones. Please, can I have a book? You don't necessarily have to send. Tell me the one you want now unless you know it. But just so we can have that on a voice note, and then you can also play it on a future episode. So thanks very much for that. I wanted to ask Mr. Jones, like, again, how did the deal come about regarding this? Was it something you were pursuing, or is it just something that they came to you with as a proposition?
Well, I mean, so, you know, so we've started Saturday AM back in 2013, and, you know, it was... You know, I had originally had the idea for it in 2012 and was doing some stuff trying to build a community and a relationship with different creators. And when I had the epiphany for Saturday AM specifically, that's when it all came together. And when I did that, I put together a business plan of how I thought we could build a brand that could compete with Shonen Jump and hell, even Marvel, you know. And I started just laying out all the things I thought were going to happen in the next several years and how we could plan to meet those challenges. Because what I was spurred by was, number one, I really felt that diversity was a sleeping giant and that people, you know, not talking to or not profiling or celebrating people of color was going to be a mistake for big companies. And I had seen that my entire career in the video game industry, where they minimized Asian people, minimized Black people, Latino people, and so forth. So, I felt really strongly that was about to be something significant. But the other part of that was obviously globalization had hit with the internet. And so now everyone in the world was talking to one another. And you were, you know, we all were connected, whether, you know, it didn't matter where you were. So the combination of a sleeping giant, in other words, untapped potential, and these extraordinary creators who no one was speaking to because they weren't embracing digital and social media early enough, meant that, you know, I knew we had a chance to create something that could compete. But one of the things that we wanted to do was to, you know, have a brand that could really go the distance. And that meant, number one, we had to create an audience, and that meant digital. That was the fastest way to do it. That's why we had a digital magazine. We had the, you know, we really heavily relied on social media and the website. And, but to get to where we wanted to be, that you had to have, you had to be physical. You had to have stuff in stores, right? Because no matter what happens, people still go to stores, right? You may not buy what you see in a store, but you're going to still go to a store, right? You may see, you may go to a store, you may see it and be like, oh, that's awesome. I like this. Oh, I like the way it feels. Okay, I'll go home and buy it on Amazon. You may do that, but you still went to a store. And so having your series, having your brand sitting somewhere in a store is important. Like it's important. It's important for brand growth. It's important for brand validity. And so it was always part of the plan. Now, the issue was, how do we get there? So we just, you know, one of the things that I think some of our competitors, even some folks who, you know, like Saturday AM or like parts of Saturday AM, but don't fully really understand all of Saturday AM, I think what they all miss is that at the end of the day, you know, it's about consistency.
Yep.
You have to be consistent. You know, you have to keep making podcast episodes to get people to listen to your podcast. I made it clear to our folks that we got to keep coming out with issues. Even if we only got 10 people reading, we got to keep coming up with the issues, keep producing the content, and eventually an audience will grow. And so here we are 8 years later, and we've got, you know, we generate, you know, tens of millions of impressions per year, I mean, per month. We have fans in over 60-some countries. You know, we have a number of people who, you know, tens of thousands of people who are download users of our content. So, you know, I think that paid download users of our content. So I think that, like, you know, it's the plan was to get there, and the plan was to be relevant, because otherwise no one's going to put you on a book. Like the thing about digital is it doesn't cost money, right? It doesn't cost the same money as print does.
Like
if I make a toy, like we have a toy, I'm looking at the toy on my desk right now. We had this company called Jabberwocky. They made some toys of our characters, or some of our characters. And like, you know, there's real money in this, right? Like there's real money paid for this. You got to pay for the plastic, you got to pay for the tooling, you got to pay for the design, you got to pay for the coloring, you got to pay for the manufacturing, the shipping. There's real money in this thing. And so when you think of it from that perspective, print, you know, or anything physical, there's money has to go into it. And no one's going to put money into something if they don't think they can make money back. So again, you know, we had to make the digital stuff work. We had to create an audience. We had to create a global audience. We had to have people who showed up, people who were willing to spend money, people who recognized us when they saw it. And that's what all of that has led us, between the press that we've gotten, the different products based on our characters that we've done, toys. We have there's a mobile game from Flick Solitaire that features our characters. We have a sticker app from Brazil called Chibi Studio that has our characters. All these things that we've done, we've been to trade shows and stuff, they've allowed us to have a brand that people around the world recognize. And so when we, you know, start talking to companies, they see all the stats and they're like, this could work. So we actually had a number of companies that we talked to, and we ultimately chose Quarto Group.
Ah, I see. Okay. That makes sense. And I love the fact that you, two things actually mentioned. First one, on the point of consistency, I think that is very, very, very true. And it's great to hear that backstory. As you mentioned, you know, if we have to release issues, regardless of who's reading or not, we have to, because you have that core there who's expecting, just like here, we have that core who's expecting that next episode and the next episode. The moment, and as I was listening to another podcast, it's like the moment you stop, it gives them an opportunity to find someone else, and you don't know if they can come back, right? That's not to say that it's not, you're not good or not, but we live in an age right now where it's called the subprime attention crisis, whereby everyone's trying to get, it's true, it's a book, instead of the mortgage crisis, now it's the attention crisis. The guy was basically saying now everyone's trying to fight for your attention. That is now literally marketeers, I guess, data or resource, as it were, like, you know, fossil fuels in terms of, not fossil fuel, but resource in terms of getting people to spend time with a brand, spend time with a company, so on and so forth. So you need to essentially make sure you are there. Once you've got someone, keep their attention, because it's easy just to be in front of someone, but can you retain them? That's the hard part.
Yes, sir.
That's the hard part. And once you can do that, that's testament. They can tell others and so on and so forth. So yeah, for people, because I know we have a lot of content creators, they message and say, keep doing what you're doing. Your content creators out there, just keep going, regardless if you get one view on YouTube, two views. You know, I was listening to another YouTuber who said it took him 5 years to get to 10,000 downloads. 5 years. And then after, the snowball effect from there, 3 years to get to 100, the next 1 year to get to 1 million. So it really does snowball. So you just have to keep going. But yeah, that was very interesting. Sorry, go on.
First of all, I completely agree with everything you just said. And like, you know, have you ever heard of Malcolm Gladwell?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, so he's got a book called The Tipping Point. And the tipping point is the idea that, like, you know, you spend, you know, it takes 10,000 hours for you to kind of like build up, you know, this opportunity for things that didn't start to happen. Right.
Yeah.
There's a woman, I'm going to forget her name. I hate that. But there's a young woman who has a comic book studio that she basically created from Kickstarter. She did some Kickstarter books. It took off, and she was able to kind of create like a cottage industry for herself. And now she's recognized as being very successful in Kickstarter. Her name is escaping. She's got a really interesting name. But anyway, she's got this line about, actually, and I'll take that back. It wasn't her. I think she's maybe mentioned something similar. But there was someone I read once who said that basically, all you need is 1,000 people willing to pay you $5 a month.
Yes, yes.
And I don't know who that was, but
it's called.
It's
a book called 1,000 True Fans. I don't know if that's the same thing you're talking about, but yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah.
It might be different. I don't remember that name of the title, but this, if the concept's there, then it's it, right? And so what this person was talking was that, like, you know, hey, because he was talking specifically about webcomics, and he was saying, look, you know, just keep doing it. He's like, because, you know, at the end of the day, what you need is 1,000 people. He's like, and that may take you 10 years to get. He's like, but I promise you, when you get that 1,000 and they're prepared to give you $5 a month, you set. And now here's the thing about it, right? If you do the math, that's basically what that's coming down to, is that's basically about 60 grand a year. Mm. Now, for some people, 60 grand a year is not a lot, right? For some people, they're like, man, I got to have six figures, you know? But still, like, you know, that's still the idea, is that, you know, you could get to a place where you could actually have people who back you up. So I think it's an interesting point. I think that, if you got content people who listen to you guys, I think that that's, you know, such a wise statement that you made. At the end of the day, folks, it's about consistency. You know, people, because in the internet in particular, people respect consistency.
Mm.
You know, like, there's so many things that happen online. There's so many things that pop up. There's so many quick viral things and so forth. But it's the person who's consistent that constantly puts it out there. Case in point, and this will be my last point on this, but we were talking about this the other day. There's a YouTuber. I won't say their name.
Sure.
There's a YouTuber who does anime stuff, anime news, anime stuff. And, you know, a lot of people dislike this person. A lot of people think that this person's, you know, their beginnings were not great, and that they were involved in some petty controversies. And that some people don't think this person's very attractive. It's irrelevant, right? But a lot of people don't like this person. I've seen more people talk trash about this person. But I watch this person.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I watch this person is because I'm sitting at my desk, I'm sitting at my couch, you know, I pull up YouTube on my Apple TV or on my phone or on my thing, and never fails that if I see this person and they're there and they got a brand new video, I'm like, I'll check it out. I'll watch it because I know they're going to be there. Right.
Mm, mm.
it doesn't matter that I don't necessarily like the way to deliver stuff. In fact, this person in particular, people probably figure this out at this point, but this person in particular, they read the news. Like, they literally just read news from other websites. You probably know who it is. That they just read the news from other websites. That's all they do. They don't have like investigators. They don't have journalists. They don't have like a website. They literally do what anybody watching their channel could do. Mm-hmm. And half the time they don't even know all the facts, and they're reading, and you're thinking like, how did you get to this place? You don't even know, like, you're reading something and you don't even know what they're talking about. But at the same time though, the person's consistent. Mm. And so you're like, man, you know, like, hey, I don't mind listening to some anime news. Even though it's anime news I could get myself by going to any of the major websites. And you know, I don't mind having it read to me, basically, right? I'll be eating something or fixing something or typing something or maybe cleaning up around the house. And if I see, you know, if something pings from this cat's got his thing on, I'm like, oh, okay, let me check that out. And so it is what it is, right? Like, it's consistency. The consistency makes you feel safe because you know what it's going to be. It doesn't mean you have to love it. It doesn't mean you have to, like, think it's the best thing in the world. But the consistency gives you a sense of comfort. And then you're able to just kind of allow yourself to support it. And then through support, that's people end up having careers. And again, that could be one of your listeners that hopefully will be, you know, Super Anime Podcast and Saturday AM and so on.
You're absolutely right. And you know, to your point of you see it and then you, even if it's good or not, you press it. We're creatures of habit, right? That's what it comes down to. You know, back in the day when you had those TV shows and you'd run home or to watch it, or now you record it, we are creatures of habit. So to your point, regardless of whether it's good or not, the moment you break someone's habit and they find something else, you leave the chance for them to, like, you know, create a new habit with that brand. So I absolutely agree. And yeah, it was really good to hear that in terms of your story. So yeah, before we move on to our next topic, please, June 2022, as I mentioned, we're going to give 10 books away. Just send a voice recording, just, you know, referencing this podcast episode of Mr. Jones. You can either, like I mentioned, tell us what book you want, or once it comes out, I'll reach out to you specifically. And then after, ask which one you want. And then, as I mentioned, get the app. Have a look at the show notes in terms of the link. And also just have a look through the Saturday AM website. It's amazing. Amazing artist on there. So, yeah. Thank you so much, Mr. Jones, for that exclusive. We really, really appreciate it. So, thank you.
Yeah, man.
And then speaking of exclusives, you hear that all the time in terms of DJ. Let's talk about hip hop and anime, because I know that's something you're really passionate and wanted to speak about, Mr. Jones. So we actually did a show on this, an episode on this called Outcast, the relationship between hip hop and anime. You can also go and check that out. But there was quite some few telling things when we did our research. But I would love to hear, first of all, your impressions as relates to why hip hop loves anime and why anime loves hip hop in that sense.
Well, you know, so I've talked about this before. I've talked about my commitment to diversity with manga and anime and why I feel like hip hop has such a interesting connection to it. And to me, it comes down to, with hip hop, it is a uniquely, well, let me say this. Let me start this way. This will be easier for folks.
No worries. So I can edit.
No. You don't have to edit it. I like being being indecisive. I think it shows people I'm real.
Yeah. Sure.
No. Listen, everybody. Here's my view of things. Mm. And here's how I connect all this stuff up. When we drop our books in June, we think it's going to be a new era of manga. I don't say that lightly. I don't mean that to be dismissive of any group that's come before us. I hope that we're being additive to the beauty of the manga industry. We want to be a part of it, as many folks do. But I really feel like we're going to signify a new stage of it. And let me explain what that is. If you look at manga, I think it's moving to four stages. Stage one is Japanese manga. It's the granddaddy. It's the original. The Narutos, the Bleaches, the Demon, you know, Kimetsu no Yaiba, Demon Slayer, One Piece, so on and so forth. It's the granddaddy of it all.
Mm-hmm.
It's been around for a long time. It set the standard, and it continues to be popular. In fact, more so than ever, thanks to globalization. The second era of manga is the Asian diaspora. That means all the countries surrounding Japan. That's China, that's Indonesia, the Philippines, and Korea. And why do I mention that? Because what if you look at the Asian diaspora, Manhwa, in the case of Korea, and some of the other titles, if you look at those, right, they are similar to manga. They have a similar aesthetic in some cases, in most cases. Stories were a little different. And during the heyday, which was in some of the 80s and 90s of Korean content, It was very martial arts heavy. They're very martial arts heavy. And so, you know, if you're from a certain age, you've seen these. You've seen these books. Very, very famous, had a wonderful run of books. And then what people don't know is that the Korean market had a crash for comic books. And so they moved to digital through a couple of big companies, their Naver being the biggest. And that's how they created Webtoon and things like that. And of course, in Korea, it's a massive industry, this Webtoon thing. And it's so big in the Asian diaspora markets that it's actually making inroads into Japan and China. The Webtoon format is a Korean invention, and it's just gone like crazy distances to become a really significant part of comic book culture. But again, its roots trace back to the very beginning of the Asian diaspora countries around Japan that were influenced by manga, wanted to make their own content. And so they created content. It looked technically similar to manga, but it differed in different ways, both culturally and then in terms of some of the subject matter. Mm. It's still relevant today. And in some cases, some would say it's battling number one, Japanese manga, for the most dominant globally because of how big Webtoons is becoming. The third era is OEL. You ever heard that term?
No.
So OEL is an American term, or at least it started as an American thing, and it stands for Original English Language Manga.
Okay.
And this has been around for a very long time. It's been around for a very, very long time. In fact, we just interviewed someone on my podcast, plug folks, called Saturday FM.
Go subscribe, go listen.
Yeah, subscribe. I get it. Our fifth episode was an interview with a man named Reggie Byers. Reggie Byers is an African American who I bought his comic, which was a manga style comic called Shuriken, in the 80s when I was a kid. He's roughly about 10 years older than me.
Okay.
And this is how crazy it is. When I saw the comic, because not only did he do this comic, and he self-published it, and it was huge. It was really, really, like, a lot of people liked Shuriken when I was a kid. But beyond that, he was the artist on this comic called Robotech, which was based on Robotech, the cartoon, which, of course, is a mashup of Macross and Southern Cross and forget the other one. But Reggie Byers was an artist on that. And so I was seeing this guy in the 80s, before manga was even a thing here, who was doing this manga-style content. And I remember thinking to myself, like, man, I want to be like this guy. I want to get to know this guy at some point. And I thought he was black. I wasn't sure. But, you know, like we talked about in the last episode, I think.
Yeah.
Black folk know. We know him by name. That name sounds black. That name sounds awfully black. So anyway, long story short, Reggie Byers is part of the OEL movement. It got coined OEL, however, about a decade and a half later with the Tokyo Pop. And Tokyo Pop under Stu Levy, when they were really making manga a big deal that has become now in the West, it was thanks to Stu Levy and Sailor Moon and a lot of the manga that he was bringing over at the time. He was like, I got to have more content. So he started soliciting Western people, whether they were from America or from other countries, to make manga. And so from that standpoint, he did that and he created what he had. And, we ended up with an explosion that happened that, of course, flamed out in the early 2000s. But still, he was responsible for the OEL really taking off. And it's been a thing ever since then. But again, people like Reggie Byers, people like Brian Lee O'Malley with Scott Pilgrim versus the World, like these are all examples of manga style comics that take the manga aesthetic and they apply them to comic books that were created specifically for the West. There's a problem with that, though. And OEL has kind of a negative connotation in the West. And again, not all comics necessarily were deemed as OEL. Like Reggie Byers didn't know he was creating OEL, and Bradley O'Malley doesn't think he was making OEL. It kind of fits the idea, but I'm sure that it wasn't a term for them when they started. But I think that the thing about it is that one of the things that you saw a lot and still see a little bit is you saw content that was made by people who weren't Japanese and starred Japanese people or took place in Japan. And that's where it started. That's where people started groaning a little bit, like, ugh, like, so you're not Japanese. You've never even been to Japan, but you've got a comic with somebody named, you know, Tanaka, you know,
yeah, whatever. Yeah.
Like, you don't, you know, what you know of Japan is what you're seeing from an anime.
Yeah.
You're not even basing this off of like an actual Japanese person. You're having your characters do like these weird nosebleeds and the strange, you know, some of the things that are culturally relevant, and you don't even understand why they're doing it. Saturday AM is the fourth wave. It's the idea that manga is here and people are creating manga style content, whether people think it's true manga or not. These folks are making manga because they've grown up with it their entire lives. You know, I'm about to be 50 years old and I was a fan of this material when I was in my teens. So manga has been steadily growing for 40 years. And there are people, therefore, who've grown up with it in the West pretty well for the past 15 or 20 years. So it's an established thing. And therefore, when they create it, they have a level of like awareness and engagement and knowledge of the material that far surpasses people who were first starting to do this in the 80s and 90s. So I say that to say that Saturday AM then is what's unique about us is that our folks are doing something the Japanese do. They're being authentic to themselves.
Mm.
When the Japanese create manga, what makes it manga is the fact that they're creating it. And it's authentic, right? Now it's like they don't have to like try to guess or create ways that a person acts Japanese.
Yeah,
they are
Japanese.
Yeah. So exactly. they're giving you all these aspects of Japanese culture. So much so that as we've talked about in the last podcast, you see, you know, elements of manga that sometimes today, of course, it always work because you're seeing like characters who don't necessarily look Japanese all the time, but they still have Japanese mannerisms. You know, Naruto's got blonde hair and blue eyes, but he's got Japanese mannerisms. He's Japanese. And so that aspect of authenticity is what Saturday AM is all about. Because we want our creators to bring authenticity to us. So we're talking about an Oblivion Rouge where the series takes place in Africa and these are all African characters. He's influenced by manga. He's got manga tropes in there, speed lines and all these various things in there. But at the same time, these are all Black characters. And these are all dealing with African tribal conflicts that he understands as someone who grew up in slavery. Apple Black, which stars a character who is not, you know, a person of color per se, is still a character, and the world is very diverse, and it's coming from someone who grew up in Nigeria, was educated in America, and so he has a very diverse view of the world where he's pulling things in from all sorts of resources, not stuff he had to research. He's pulling in from stuff that he's lived. So tribal customs, Arabic elements, Arabic styles of dress and so forth, Asian characters, Black characters, Latino characters. It's like he's pulling it all together because they're all authentically from things that he's experienced. And so I think that sort of like flow in terms of the genealogy of the history of manga is what we're all about. And so when you think about that, that's what's always kind of been strange to me about manga is that it's so much like hip hop. Because hip hop is a trend that no matter what you try to do with it, at its core, it is a Black American art form.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean it can't exist anywhere else. You've got Black hip hop in the UK. Japanese have hip hop. Latino people, Colombia and Brazil have hip hop. But hip hop at its core began in New York and places like Flatbush and so forth in New York City amongst Black African Americans. And so that's what it is. And so when you see kids, you know, and again, I'm old enough to have experienced hip hop fully. I was there from the very beginnings with Jam Master Jay and
Kumo D
and the gang. And even before that, back when Fab Five Freddy did the verse with Blondie.
Oh, wow.
So you're looking at all of this history of manga and the thing about it, I mean, history of hip hop. And the thing about it was that I remember I was there. I remember those conversations about, well, that's not real hip hop, man. The Beastie Boys ain't real hip hop. Eminem ain't real hip hop. That's not real hip hop. Oh, man, you know, that Jamiroquai, man, yeah, he's doing all this stuff, but he ain't real hip hop. We've seen it.
Yeah.
Women hip hop. Like, man, they not. Man, I mean, Clinton's all right, but she ain't real hip hop.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, we've seen that. I've lived it, and I've seen that life. I've lived it. I've experienced it. And manga is so similar to it because, again, it starts with that era that we're talking about. The Japanese era is still relevant, and it's still the core construct of what manga is, which is just comics, but it's the way that they do comics, right? Mm-hmm. There's a style to it. There's a personality to it. Let's also be upfront. One of the things, again, about the OAL stuff was that it's hard to say you're creating manga when you don't appear in a serialized format. You know, Saturday AM comes out every month with Saturday AM, or every quarter with Saturday PM and Saturday Brunch. And the thing about that is that the reason we structure that is because even the stories have a flow to them when you have to operate that way. As opposed to just, I'm going to do this chapter, I'm going to do this chapter, and then you're going to buy the book. Like, no, like, you have to read it as a flow, because the story has these ebbs and flows, and they have this rhythm that allows manga to have this crescendo. And that's what makes it unique, as opposed to American comic books, that where you can still have twists and turns, but it's different because these are like, you know, one comic that you buy each month for 6 months, and then you collect it into a graphic novel, and it's a different feel to it. Even if the story is amazing, it's still got a different flow to it, it's a different rhythm. It's like percussion of using one instrument versus another. It's like it's a different flow. And so that, to me, I think is what's so critical about understanding manga and why diversity is so effective, because, you know, there's always been this sort of pushback against diversity because it's like, well, that's not real manga. I get it. We did the same thing with white people and Asian people and Latino people when it came to hip hop. But the thing about it is that the kids who grew up with it, right, the further you got away from the generation that started hip hop and the further you got, you know, outside of the country, kids are growing up like Stormzy's growing up, and these kids are growing up, all around the world. And they're like, man, I love this stuff. And like, you're not going to tell me what's hip-hop. Like, I love this. I'm going to make it. I don't care. I'm not going to move to New York just so I can. I'm going to do what I'm going to rap about what I want to rap about. I'm going to talk about what I want to talk about because it's my truth. But I just like to do it in the style of hip-hop. And so that, I think that's, I was having this conversation with someone from Japan the other day, and I'm like, you know, that to me is the fundamental thing about Saturday AM is that, again, that's why I talk about those four eras, because the Saturday AM era is not like this sort of novelty the way OEL was. Saturday AM is like, it's authentic. Like, these kids are creating manga. They're creating, you may not like that it's called manga. You may not feel that it should be called manga. They don't care. They're creating what's in their heart and what's in their truth. And that's the series they're telling. And they're doing it in a style that has all the other attributes of manga. It is serialized in an anthology. It has the manga aesthetic art form. It uses some of the same techniques, you know, and it's authentic. It's the truth of the creator is the truth of the characters. And that's what you get.
Do you know what?
So that's how it all comes together.
That's going to get a That was absolutely amazing. That was honest. And you know, I never actually thought of it in that vein. And I like the way you said, as you mentioned, you broke it down into those four eras. Because you're right, you know, being your authentic self today or being authentic is so powerful and needed. I'm actually currently reading a book called Still Like an Artist. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's quite a short book, but one of the quotes in it is, don't just steal the style, steal the thinking behind behind the style. You don't want to look like your heroes. You want to see like your heroes. And I think in terms of how we are today, as relates to taking influences from different places, you talked about the Apple Black guy growing up in, being born in Nigeria, growing up in America. We are the sum of our experiences, right? And it's more so a case where when we're talking about authenticity, we can only do what we've experienced. And as it relates to hip hop, you know, if you've experienced in Japan, if you experience hip hop, you love it. As you mentioned, you're gonna do it. Why not? You've loved the culture, you love the art style, you love the form. Why not do it? It may have originated in New York. It's this same argument I have with, you know, anime style anime being done in America or somewhere else. You know, people saying, oh, it's not anime because it wasn't done in Japan. Okay, fine. Yes, it was. If you want to be like that specific, then yes, maybe it's not. But it's like saying, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it's like saying sushi done in the UK is not sushi because it's not done in Japan. Okay, you might not get this.
I agree.
Yeah, you agree. Yeah,
I
exactly.
agree. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. We've had, over the years, like I've been attacked by so many different groups, you know. Folks, because at the end of the day, what everyone wants is they want you to do that. They want you to validate them. And it's like, so their opinion, you know, it's like, well, you're not diverse. Like we've been told that we're too diverse. We've been told we're not diverse enough. And it's always ridiculous. Wow. Either way. But yeah, seriously, trust me. I deal with it all the time. And, but like, you know, but like the anime thing is always ridiculous because again, like, first of all, let's just establish the fact that at the end of the day, so much of, and this is what, again, I hope that we can change with Saturday AM and hopefully the success that we'll have. But like, one of the things that always strikes me as odd is the people who want to try to tell you what to think do not have any experience in the things they're telling you about. Mm. So like when they say that, you know, well, you know, it can't be anime because it was constructed in America. Like, do they not know how many movie productions in Japan rely on Hollywood talent? Mm. Like, you know, Hollywood is Hollywood. It's Hollywood. Like the same way that we revere anime, everyone around the world reveres Hollywood, you know, special effects and cinematographers. You know, if they, you know, like if you're making a movie in some other country and you're like, man, we got the guy that worked on Terminator, who filmed Terminator, did the cinematography for Terminator, or did the location scouting, or did the special effects work, the CGI for Star Wars. Like, yeah. I mean, so like, does that make those movies not, you know, Japanese or Korean or whatever? It's like, it's just always so strange to me. The way that some of these people who are not, by the way, they're not, it's not like you're talking to someone who works in film, right? It's some kid on the internet who just has an opinion.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they don't make comics. They've never sold a comic in their life. They've never worked with or met any celebrities ever. And yet they want to tell you what the process is to do these things as if they have this, this inherent belief. And like I said, at the end of the day, all it is, just this desire to be validated in what they believe. So, I, to me, you know, that whole scenario for the idea of the eras and so forth, again, it was so important to me as, and I've been talking about this for years, but it's so important to me to share it every chance I get, because like I said, number one, it's the genesis of what Saturday AM is all about. But two, it's just really putting kind of a stake in the ground for the idea of people thinking that they can tell other people what they are, you know, like, you know, like, you know, you're not, this is a manga. Like, you can't call it manga. Like, who are you? Like, I drew it. I created it. I know what I intended it to be. It is. Goodbye. Like, it has nothing to do with you. So go on about your business, you know? So, exactly. It's an interesting thing, but yeah, you know, there's so many, again, in the global population, we all interact with each other so much and we're pulling from different resources so frequently. We're being inspired by different things. My Horikoshi was inspired from My Hero Academia by American Superhero Comics. Like, I mean, this is the world we live in. Like, and it should be like this. We should all have, you know, this sort of appreciation for culture and diversity of ideas from all over the world, so they can make us and make what we do more rich with possibilities. So it's just strange, but, you know, it's nothing shy. It's not surprising at the end of the day, because we've seen it for years, and eventually those people will die out.
Absolutely. I think the only two things I will say on that point, with authenticity, I get sometimes why people, you know, that's fine, but that's a different thing. I think so long as you're authentic to yourself, and it will come through your manga and your story anyway, so that I think that's absolutely fine. And then the other point I wanted to make was, so long as the person, the individual, has studied the techniques, because you can't just draw like a stick man and say it's a manga or something like that. But so long as someone has studied the techniques, literally, because for me, that shows love of the craft, right? Like someone in Japan, rapping and stuff like that, you know, the 8-beat or whatever, the flow, the style, you know. Of them studying it just, and then after implement it, that's what makes it what it is. Just this way someone who's here studies sushi and then does it here, again, you may think it's not as authentic as Japan, whatever, but at least they've studied the craft and they've given you what they think is their best version, or even so, or maybe even fused it with something else. To your point, everything's getting fused, and I really like the fact that you mentioned that really is the future, as you mentioned with Saturday AM, in terms of people pulling from different resources and experiences, and then creating like unique mangas as relates to their experience and their authentic self. So no, that actually is a It's an exciting future.
No, I'm just going to say, you know, you were talking about, and I agree with them completely, about the notion of people perfecting their craft. And I think the thing about that is just, you know, so we're all on the same page here, is that, look, everyone is different. I think, again, this is the thing about manga and the thing about people who have these conversations about manga and anime, because, you know, what exists in Japan is far more diverse, far more options, right, of content. Mm. That we ever get in the rest of the world, right? Even if you had Crunchyroll and Funimation, there's still more anime you're probably not going to see. Even if you had subscriptions to Viz or Comixology or wherever, there's still going to be tons of manga that you'll never see, right? Mm. And so there's a lot going on there. And my point in saying that is that there are different art styles in Japan. I think people sometimes get confused and think it's all Toriyama or, you know, Kishimoto. Mm. Or it's like, no, like there are different art styles in Japan, just like there are in, you know, the UK and in America. There are different art styles, there are different artists. Urasawa's one of my favorites, and he's totally different from these folks we just talked about. One, who created One Punch Man before Murata-san came into there, is very different. Like, I mean, you would see his work and think instantly manga, at least not traditional manga. So, I think we have to always be very careful about the idea that there's one set path. There's diversity in Japan, just like there's diversity everywhere else. Mm. And the issue is just, you know, we need to make sure we expand, if we can, the definition and the idea of what these things look like. And so I think every artist should focus on capturing the feel of manga. But the feel of manga is not necessarily the look of manga, if that makes sense, right?
Yeah.
And my way of putting that, I just want to make sure I leave give your listeners, is coming back to my definition of hip hop. One of the things about hip hop, because again, today, right, there are folks, I mean, hip hop's been around for, again, almost as long as I've been alive. So even today in Japan, in other countries, there are people who do hip hop who are old school by now, because they've been doing it for so long, right? They've been doing it for so long. So when they got started, I'm sure they were thought of as maybe not being legitimate, this, that, and the other. But now you look at where they are today, it's like they've been doing stuff for going on two decades. Mm. And my point in saying that is that, so think about this. Think about the hip hop analogy that has relates to manga. Think about when you're someone who's like, man, I love hip hop, and I'm not black, and I'm not from America, and, you know, I don't live in a city like New York City or so forth, but man, I still want to get my thoughts out there, want to get my ideas out there, just like my favorite hip hoppers and so forth. And so you decide to try to dress like the hip hoppers you see. So you sag your pants. You turn your hat backwards and so forth, and you try to reflect the sort of gangster mentality that not all hip hop people have, but you try to reflect that. When we see that, when people who are of color like us see that, we go, oh God, like that ain't black people. That, you know, you're embarrassing yourself, and you're embarrassing black. We don't all look like that. You know what I'm saying? Not even all hip hoppers look like that. And that's my point about that, is that that's how it is with manga sometimes. I think people sometimes, they try so hard to look like Japanese manga. They try to put stuff in there. They've never been to Japan. They don't know the culture. They don't speak Japanese. And they'll throw these kind of random things in there, and they'll think it was like, yeah. And it's like, it might look like manga, but it don't feel like manga. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Like, you might look the part, but because you don't necessarily reflect the value of it, it just comes across kind of strange. And so that's why I talk about the hip hop analogy so much. I think there's a lot of things that we can learn from that. Like I said, if your idea of Japan is what you see in an anime, then boy, you need to do some research. You need to like hop on a plane and go to Japan, or watch some YouTube videos of like Asian bosses and like that, and watch some real Japanese people, because, you know, manga is a cultural thing. Anime is a cultural thing. They're not necessarily real things. And that's not how, like, to think that that's how Japanese people are, is you're really missing the boat. Just like to see a hip hop video and think that all black people are like that, is you're really missing the boat.
Yeah, no, that, again, that is so true. That is very, and I think goes back to your point when you said about Eminem, right? You know, just because he's white, blah, blah, blah. But again, it's a love for the craft. It doesn't.
That's right.
And I really like the part that you said, you know, take that and then, you know, expand upon it, you know. Eminem, regardless of what you think of him as a lyricist, to me, he's one of my top five.
Oh, without question. To many black people, he's like one of the top five. I mean, that's how good he is.
He's so good, honestly. Yeah. Like, he's ridiculous. So, And I think, again, to your point, whether you're in Nigeria or Ghana or America, wherever, mm-hmm. if you actually take the craft, of the love of the craft, and do something with it, which inspires, you know, a generation or inspires even just your local town, wherever it may be, I think you're right in that sense, you know. People just need to be their authentic self. Don't try and, you know, as you mentioned, copy, because it's in Japan, I'm going to copy it like the way they do it. You can learn from it, but then expand upon it. So no, absolutely. Again, you've dropped a lot of wisdom on this show, on this episode. Really appreciate it. Really, really appreciate it. Again, thank you so much. Was there anything else that you wanted to mention on that point around hip hop and manga and the transition between obviously Saturday AM, you know, taking it from that, I guess, fourth layer over the next, I'll say, next coming years and probably even decades?
No. I mean, I think, you know, like I said, I think I've said everything I think as relates to anime, you know, and hip hop and manga, and hopefully people understanding kind of where we're coming from with Saturday AM. Doesn't mean you have to necessarily agree with it, but at least you give you some context to where we're coming from with what we do. And again, I truly hope that our folks will check us out in June. We're going to have more appearances. We'll have some more announcements in the next couple of weeks and months. So we have a big thing we're hoping to announce soon that'll be coming in January. So we'll certainly let you know when that happens. And then likewise, people can, you know, check out our podcast, Saturday FM, check us out on social media. And of course, get our app. You can get our app. You can go to our web app if you don't want to download anything. That's at app.saturday-am.com. And go to our website, check us out. We'll certainly have some links there. As soon as it's able to pre-order the graphic novels, we will have that link in our app and all of our website and social media, and certainly let Ed and his folks here at Super Anime Podcast know. But no, that's it. We really appreciate it. We're looking forward to doing some new stuff next year.
Honestly, thank you so much for coming on. And as I mentioned, I'll say it again, send us a voice note. What did you love about this episode, actually? Now, because it was completely off the top. So I was kind of thinking of, so just say, what did you love about this episode? Send us a voice note. And then, as I mentioned, the first 10 will get a copy of the book when it comes out in June next year. And then also I was gonna say, Mr. Jones, like, whenever you're in the UK, you know, let us know. We're happy to meet up, and of course vice versa, when we're there, we'll definitely make sure we come and check you guys out as well.
Well, we'll say to that real quickly then, you know, we are planning out our schedules for supporting the graphic novel line. Our Corto group has been really kind and is really aggressive about trying to put stuff together, so I'm positive there'll be some appearances, and we hope to certainly let, you know, you or your listeners know when and where. I can say that next month, Thought Bubble UK, which I think is in Leeds, I'm not sure where but Thought Bubble UK is a big show in the UK. One of our creators, Mitch Proctor, is the creator of a series we have called Henshin, which runs inside of Saturday Brunch. He will be there. He will have a couple of goodies for people who stop by his table. Talking about Saturday AM and our upcoming graphic novel program. So you can certainly check it out there. And again, we're really excited to meet you guys, and I hope that we'll be doing more of that next year.
I've got one last question for you. Jay-Z or Nas?
I grew up, I'm a little older, so I grew up Nas was someone who was really special, but at the same time, though, I look at all the things that Jay-Z has done, and I have to say I have a lot of time for Jay-Z, because I think he's done so many amazing things, and so his works is really interesting. And some of his original stuff, like any of these hip-hop creators, their first couple of albums, when they're really raw and they're really trying to do different things, is good. Like, it's really good, and you see how they became who they are. And so both of them are equal, you know, in terms of their impact. But Jay-Z is just a bit more of his, what his success he's had, what he's been able to do with
longevity.
His longevity makes him interesting to me.
All right, then. Sorry. What about then Big Daddy Kane or KRS-One?
Oh, KRS-One. Because KRS-One. So, like, if you look at where hip-hop has gone several times throughout the years, KRS-One was one of the first people who merged with hip-hop the idea that you could have social commentary. He was one of the first ones to do that. And so if young people, if you've never heard of KRS-One, you got to look him up.
Yeah,
he's so special. Awesome. Yeah, he's so special. and some of his original tracks would just blow you away. So I highly recommend KRS-One for sure.
Yeah. He's like the back then Kendrick kind of thing.
Back then Kendrick. He was there before Tribe Called Quest. I mean,
yeah,
of course. He was the one before a lot of the stuff you see today. Yeah. He really laid down the marker that hip hop could be more than just telling funny stories.
The metaphors and the similes. Oh, he was another serious lyricist. But yeah,
big time. Yeah, no, yes, that's right. That's right. You are the true lyricist.
Look, and thinking of true lyricists, thank you so much for being a great lyricist on this podcast. Literally dropping so much down, so much knowledge, and we thank you so much. Again, as I mentioned, all those links he mentioned will be in the show notes, listeners. Go check out the app. Go check out the website. As he mentioned, there's also a web app if you don't want to download the actual app. And then, yeah, next year, I'm looking forward to those to the release. And I know it's going to be something special. So thank you so much, Mr. Jones. And everyone, till next week. Thanks. Bye. Hey, Super Family. As always, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the podcast, please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the show. It takes less than 30 seconds. Doing so will allow us to grow the show and encourage us to keep putting out more content. In case you're wondering how to subscribe, rate, and review the show, just go to ratethispodcast.com/superanimepodcast. That's super with 3 U's. We will also leave a link to it in the show notes for you to go to as a simple way to subscribe, rate, and review the show. We love your reviews, so please keep them coming and we will read them out in future episodes. Please do share this podcast with anyone you feel will enjoy the show. Finally, to keep the conversation going, we're super keen to hear your thoughts, questions, and opinions on the show's discussion points. To get in contact with us, you can either leave a voice note via the mic on our website, superanimepodcast.com, that's super with 3 U's, or you can write a note via the contact section, superanimepodcast.com/contact. It's also in the show notes as well. Along with your email, please leave your name and location from where you're listening from, and we will be sure to shout you out and include some of your thoughts in the next and upcoming episodes. Have a great day wherever you are, and bye for now.